Our doctor is in, and so are the doctors of Capital Health. Welcome to the all-new Health 411. Every Sunday morning at 10, Dr. Jonathan Karp, along with our respected panel of guests from Capital Health, take you on an important medical journey to help you navigate your health and the healthcare system to reach your destination, good health. Health 411 is underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. Capital Health is the region's leader in providing progressive quality patient care with exceptional physicians, nurses, and staff, as well as advanced technology.
107.7 The Bronc and 107.7TheBronc.com. Proudly nominated for a National Association of Broadcasters 2019, 2021, 2022, and 2023 Marconi Award for Best College Radio Station, as well as a winner of the 2023 IBS College Media Award for Universities Under 10,000 Students. We are broadcasting from the Bronx All Digital Studios on the campus of Rider University in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. Welcome to this Health 411 podcast and radio show. I am your host, Professor Jonathan Karp. This Health 411 program is presented by Capital Health. In Health 411, we discuss a variety of issues affecting health and wellness, public health, healthcare policy, and the science of health and healthcare. Our goal is to expand your knowledge and your perspective. Today, our student producer, Dan Geller, and I are joined in the studio by Josh Brewer, who's listening in, a new student, and our guest, Ken Cox. Ken is... Ken, why don't you welcome to the program? You're sort of an entrepreneur. You own a lot of businesses. Can you tell the audience about yourself as a, sort of a launching, as a place to launch?
Okay, absolutely. So, like you said, my name is Ken Cox. I am, for lack of better definition, business owner, entrepreneur. My day job, I operate a data center. And that is very high technical, very restrictive standard operating procedures, very, very narrow scope of work. And then at nighttime, I go to my gym. My wife and I own a little boxing school called Box STL. And I go there primarily today. I just work with the kids now. I used to work with the adults and I did some amateur competition. But today I just work with the kids. And my wife and I own that business. And it leads to just a really great day.
There's an article about you in actually an Entrepreneur magazine that has an interesting thing that sort of in a sense launches some of the healthcare related things that you wanted to talk about. It talks about you starting drinking when you were 10 years old. And so how do you get from that to owning a boxing gym in school? Among other things.
Yeah, and I would say that the started drinking at 10 is an understatement. I've been drinking since I can remember. My stepfather, you know, before he was my stepfather, even at the age of 2 years old, you know, can he go get me a beer? Can I have a drink, Dad? Sure, kind of stuff, right? So by the age of 10, I was drinking by myself daily, right? The kid putting in the thermos, going to school.
Where did you grow up?
You know, a ton of crazy things happened. I end up going into the entertainment industry out of high school and college. I quit a wonderful job at Washington University while I was attending class there to travel in the entertainment industry. And then in 99, I started settling down. I was 24 years old and I got a job in IT. That started settling me down. And I was, you know, at 24, you can drink all night and it's not a problem still. For a lot of people. So that's what I did. Started working in the corporate world. And then that's when I realized that my ability to drink and entertain people became a pretty wild asset, right? Because now I can, with international clients, I can, I have quite a large customer base in Germany. And they like to drink. So when they would be in the States, you know, I'd be the one taking everybody, all the executives out to drinks and all that stuff. So it turned into that my drinking became a reward system for me, right? Not only did I get to go drink, but I had a reward system built into the more I could drink, the more business I could close, right? Because that's where most of my business happened, was at the bar with executives and things like that. And if I could roll three or four of them together, then I could probably close more business. And happy hours turned into hitting a shower before the next day started.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting because I've joked around with people that, you know, alcohol is the currency of academia. Is alcohol also sometimes the currency in the business world? Is sort of what you're saying?
It's definitely the lubricant, right?
Okay.
to get deals done, right? And then, you know, whenever you drink large amounts of alcohol with people, you become, you know, bonded together in a way that you can't really, it doesn't happen any other way, right? Or at least any other way that I've experienced. So for some reason, as humans, poisoning each other together creates a bond.
That's
hard to separate.
So that's an interesting.
And there's a trust that's built between the two parties that is just, I don't know what neuro crap happens inside of our brain to make that happen, but it's not the healthiest solution.
No. And so we'll explore some of these things, but have you noticed in your experiences in the music and business world that it's primarily alcohol, or have you seen a lot of other drugs that people have shared together as part of the, you know, behind the scenes bonding experience?
Yeah, I'm happy to see our country's stigma on cannabis reducing. And that is, you know, prevalent in both worlds, not nearly like alcohol. The other drugs are there for sure, but they're stigmatized, right? They're, it's not common to see them happening at a lunch at 11 a.m., right? Okay. But it was totally common for us to hit lunch at 11 a.m., go to the bar, have a couple drinks, and, you know, turn that into a happy hour and then float that into the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no negative thing that happened to anybody. I mean, a couple DUIs here and there. And I guess, yeah, we did have some people die.
But that's never a good thing.
But me personally, right, I didn't have the positives outweighed the negatives in my life with alcohol until I got the diagnosis of liver disease.
Okay. And the my understanding is the most common liver disease that's pre-cirrhosis is fatty liver disease. So is that what you're talking about?
I was diagnosed with alcohol-related fatty liver disease.
Cool. Not cool, but that is a thing. Now, from what you know at that time, you were diagnosed with it. Is it a permanent thing, or is this something that behavioral choices can lead you down to a reversal?
Right. So I'm not a doctor, and I don't know the numbers exactly. I'm going to paraphrase some numbers here. My liver enzymes were around 1,800, and 2,000 is non-reversible. Is if those are the right numbers, and it's vaguely in that ballpark, right? I'm not a doctor, don't hold me to that.
Okay.
So we caught it luckily, like just in time, right? Which led to another addiction, right? My doctor was an old school doctor, and during the diagnosis, I was in the emergency room and thought I was having a heart attack. I was actually going through withdrawal. And you know, we couldn't figure out why my heart rate was going up and down and all these things. Interesting story. I had strep throat, and it was like 4 days into strep throat. I was starting to feel better. I got called in to one of our remote data centers. I went there to work. I was feeling okay when I got there. And then I just panic attack after panic attack started coming in, went to the emergency room, got to the doctor, couldn't find anything wrong with my heart. They kept asking me the question, you know, well, you know, and I've been honest with my doctors. My doctor kept asking me, he's like, well, are you still drinking? I'm like, yeah, I'm still drinking. And then finally he asked me, when was the last time you had a drink? I'm like, oh, well, it's been about 2 or 3 days ago. I've had strep throat. He's like, I know what's wrong with you. And let's go ahead and pull liver and panels and all that other stuff. And he told me that day, say you can go home and keep living this lifestyle. And you got a couple of years. But, you know, once these counts get over this next hump, you're not recoverable. But right now you are. So if you want to quit, we'll quit together. And unfortunately, he put me on Xanax that day. And that was the first attempt at quitting drinking, first serious attempt.
Oh.
And that's been 7 years ago.
Cool. And I do want to hear more about your journey to sobriety and the role of addressing stigma of drugs and stigma of sobriety in the business world. But we'll take a break for some underwriting announcements on Health 411. You're listening to 107.7 The Bronc and 107.7thebronc.com.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronc is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant, that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell, to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties, to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health. There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronc and 107.7thebronc.com from the Digital Bronx Studios. Welcome back to Health 411. I'm Professor Jonathan Karp, and we are continuing our conversation with Ken Cox. Ken is an entrepreneur and owner of many businesses who's telling us about his background and his journey, a personal journey to sobriety, and the role of especially alcohol in sort of business and entrepreneurship and making deals. And at the end of the last segment, he was talking about it actually took an admittance to the hospital to actually start his journey to sobriety. Were you able to quit after getting the sort of the warning from some physicians that your liver is not enjoying this 20 or 30 year exposure to alcohol?
Well, alcohol is a tricky mistress, right? So right out of the gate, okay, talk to the wife, get her on board. I'm on these Xanax. I really don't know what that means to me long term, which inevitably means another, at least one more bout of withdrawal that I get to go through in my life, right?
Yes, because that can be addictive as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a benzodiazepine.
Start the treatment, start going to, I started a program called Smart Recovery, which.
Can I interrupt for a second? Because I'm going to ask you a question. And I'm just listening to you, and you're married. Was drinking with your wife an important part of your relationship with her? Was it like hard for her? It's like, oh my God, how can you quit drinking? Because, you know, when we go out, we drink all the time together. How am I going to drink and you not drink? Kind of stuff. So was that part of the conversation that, or was she on board?
It was not, luckily for me.
Okay.
And I don't know if I could have, I don't know if my significant other wasn't 100% on board, if I could have gotten to where I'm at today. And I'm not going to say that I'm in recovery still, right? I don't think I'm recovered. I still have struggles.
Right. And you'll probably have them near daily. You'll probably have them for the rest of your life if you believe to other people who have done it. Yeah.
When my wife and I met, I was a bartender and she was a bartender, and alcohol was a significant part of our lives. Significant. Luckily for me, she had something wrong with her inside of her intestines. I don't know what it's called, but something about was alcohol was not treating her very well in her stomach after our daughter was born.
Okay.
So she. Alcohol was not a staple for her anymore. It was not part of her daily life, right? She might have a glass of Grand Marnier a couple times a year, that kind of thing. So her alcohol consumption was nowhere near mine at that point in our relationship.
Okay.
Luckily. And I don't know that I would have been able to, if I didn't have the support of her and her not drinking, I don't know that I'd have been able to get to where I'm at.
Good.
It was a struggle with her being there.
Did she have an alcohol addiction problem when she had to stop? Or was she just one of those people who just sort of stopped and it wasn't really an issue?
I think she's a typical woman. not that I'm trying to be negative there at all, but like, you know, the maternal instincts kick in. It's like the second that we found out she was pregnant, I mean, she got her shit together.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I didn't because I thought that that's how I paid the bills.
Right. It's interesting. Right. And so, right, alcohol was part of your identity in the business world. And
part of my identity completely.
Completely. And I think that's very, very common. You know, maybe the days of the two martini lunch are gone, but you're laughing. I don't know. Maybe they're not gone.
They weren't when I was there. And they weren't a year ago, I don't think. Right. I can go across the street right now and sit down and have drinks with friends with zero doubt in my mind.
Okay. Right. I'm sure you could. So was there when you finally start this process of going through recovery, the way you said it, it's like the first time I'm trying to quit drinking. So there had to be multiple times. Is that it's like smoking where you quit.
Yeah.
You're really good at it. So you know how to quit.
I went through AA at the age of 13. I got in some trouble. It was court ordered. I got caught with some things that I shouldn't have had, doing some things I shouldn't have been doing. So I went through the AA program a long, long time ago through something in the 80s that they called tough love. I don't think they do that any longer.
Okay.
It sounds like an 80s thing.
This encouraged parents to do stuff like lock their children out of the house if they show up 2 minutes late from curfew and don't let them in that night.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore, I don't think.
So that was my first like kind of attempt. It didn't really stick. I was in and out of trouble through until I, you know, was a little bit older, until I turned 16, and then I started getting my act together a little bit with legal trouble. So this time I'm making a significant effort to stop drinking, and I made it probably about 2.5 years. And then I'm dumb enough I went through the withdrawals of alcohol, which are miserable. I went through the withdrawals of Xanax, and you know, they put me on some other drugs to help me get off the Xanax and all this other stuff, right? These are, from my understanding, withdrawals that can kill you, right? So it got pretty scary there from time to time.
Just for curiosity, do you remember if they used Anabuse? Did you try that?
I did not.
Okay, you know what I'm talking about. It's just, I think so.
I'm not real familiar with all the drugs.
Okay,
but
that's fine. We won't go back there. Kept trying and trying and trying, and I'm just going to make
I quit then, right?
Oh, you did quit.
About
okay.
2.5 years in, I get off with Xanax. I'm meeting with my doctor, and he's like, you know, your liver counts are really good. You know, we're down in the, you know, 200-300s. We want to see him in the 40s and, you know, in that area, 30s to 40s. And I'm like, well, can I drink anymore? And my doctor's, this guy was old. He's like, if you can keep it under control, if you can go out and you can have one or two beers at dinner, sure. Well, that was just a slippery slope.
Yeah, because
right?
Your AA mentor was not going to be on board with that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that, you know, I really had this concept of I just want to be a normal guy. I just want to be able to go to dinner and have a beer. I just want to be able to go to a happy hour and have two or three drinks. And I can be that guy. Like, 60% of the time if I'm drinking, but there's 40% of the time that, you know, three or four drinks in, and then it's off to the races, and then the races just, they're hard to stop once you get there. And it's not a day thing. It's that wraps into days and weeks and months and years for me, unfortunately. So
even now you're an entrepreneur, and do you still, obviously you're in recovery, but do you still find that alcohol is a part of the equation, or do you sort of remove yourself from that?
I remove myself from that completely, which makes business more challenging.
Mm-hmm. But it's worth it, isn't
right?
it?
I believe so. It's led me to some new creations. It's led me down new paths through more experimental thought processes. It has helped me a ton as far as moving my personal life forward. It has hurt the seemingly social aspect of my life. Right, I don't have an outlet anymore that at any time, any day, I can go meet people and have and then just relax and have a good time and get to meet new people. I don't have that any longer, or at least not one that I have found. Right, when you drink and you drink like I did, it didn't matter. It could be 4 a.m. and I could find someone to go hang out with and meet somebody new and create something brand new that day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that part any longer.
Yeah, interesting. And I want to hear about this because what you're talking about is the sort of the potential role of sobriety in the business world and the potential stigma of sobriety. But we need to take a break, and we'll be right back on Health 411 after these brief underwriting announcements. You're listening to 107.7 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health.
There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronx and 1077thebronx.com. Welcome back to Health 411. We're continuing our conversation with Ken Cox, entrepreneur and owner of many businesses, about his personal journey to sobriety in the business world and how it affects him. At the end of the last segment, Ken mentioned that when you decide you're not going to drink all the time in the business world and socially, it restricts sort of the interaction you have. It restricts the sort of the social group. Does it also restrict business colleagues? Are business colleagues respectful of the fact that, yeah, I'll have a couple drinks and Ken's just going to hang out with me and drink some soda? Or I guess in St. Louis, they call it pop.
I don't know what they call it. Probably Coke.
Coke, okay. Fair enough.
I don't think we're far enough south to be pop. Okay. But just a couple miles south, I think you're there. So it shouldn't make a difference, but it does at the end of the day, right? Because if you don't have a seat at the table when conversations are happening in a wildly fluid state, then the other person that puts a person at that table, the other company that has a person at the table, has a significantly better chance of winning that business. Now, you just have to be comfortable with the fact that if that's what it takes to win the business, then I'm okay losing it.
Is the analogy I'm thinking about in some circles, playing golf? You know, some people play golf to sort of do the same sort of thing. It's like to be out there, have the connections, have that shared experience. And then if somebody doesn't play golf, they're just not out there. They're not talking and, you know, building the friendships.
Correct.
In that place, you're building friendships, getting a little exercise, instead of building friendships of taking a poison together.
I have never played golf without drinking a beer.
Mm. Oh, that's interesting.
Or 12.
So it all goes together.
I don't think I've ever played a game of golf without having 12 beers.
Oh, my God. Wow. Does your game get better or worse as you go through the
I don't care what game we're playing. I only scramble.
Oh, okay. So, I got it.
I'll just tee up wherever the closest ball was hit to the hole.
Yeah. So
that's how I'll keep my score.
So people joke about playing drunken golf. You were really playing drunken golf if you're drinking 12 in a round. Wow. Okay. So does it mean that are you okay being there? But are you accepted? Like I get it. You remove yourself. But if you decide that I want to hang out with you guys today, I have the willpower to do it. Do you feel comfortable? Do people let you hang out there and not have alcohol?
There are a lot of scenarios where you can just skate it through. Happy hours. If you're just walking around with a glass of water, nobody really says anything to you. When it comes down to the animalistic nature of we're going to share around, sitting out of that is always awkward, right? Telling somebody no the third time is always challenging, right? And to do it in a way that isn't hostile,
right,
that is still
right,
understanding that, hey, they just don't understand what I'm going through, not snapping at them is a challenge, right? It's like, hey, man, I've told you three times. No, I don't want one, right? This is, we're all adults here, and it's crazy that we're still applying this kind of peer pressure on each other, even as adults. It's insanity.
Right, because what, we're on a college campus here. I mean, it's not as bad as the 80s when Nancy Reagan was talking about, you know, just say no to drugs and alcohol. That didn't work so well. But it's so what you're saying is it's hard even for adults to accept other adults who are making like a mature personal choice. I mean, it's for college students too, right? Adults are just grown. They're just grown up. There's older college students in many respects.
I would say, and my tenure at college was short-lived. I'm not an academic, but I would say in school it's actually easier to say, no, I got a test in the morning, or you had built-in excuses. As an adult, as a business owner, I have zero excuse other than I'm not going to drink for my own personal benefit. I'm going to put my benefit in front of my customer's benefit. When, you know, a $30,000 a month client says, hey, let's go to the bar tonight after we get done with this maintenance window and hang out for a little bit, telling him no is challenging, and he doesn't understand it. Now he doesn't feel like you're friends anymore, or, you know, a lot of these business relationships are built on that kind of, especially when that's how you build your business, are built on that kind of.
Yeah, because people want to do business with people they like, with their friends.
You're taking them to the ball games, you're taking them to the bars, and you're going to conventions. It's fun shit. Like, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. And when you're no longer that, you know, hey, we do business together, but we also go to the ball game and we go to the bar occasionally. We go to casinos a lot together. You lose a substantial part of your networking capabilities. And you have to learn how to do it a different way.
Well, let me ask you this too, because I'm going to use your word. Can those things be fun sober?
They can be different fun.
Okay. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Oh, I've never been to a pro baseball game without not being drunk. I don't know. I've never done a lot of those things not drunk.
Wow.
Gotcha.
Is that on the bucket list to do that, to see what it's like on your personal journey? Or is it just dangerous for you to do?
Without the liquor, there's very few things that are on my bucket list. More time in the woods, more time at the beach, more time in the water. Those are the things that prioritize in my life now over, you know, I know what the disco balls and the flashing lights and the bumping music is. I've lived that life probably more than most. Do I love it? Absolutely. I love that lifestyle. Is it sustainable for a man that's almost in his 50s? No. So I just don't have a desire to go to a baseball game. I like boxing matches. We go to boxing matches a lot, right? Mm-hmm. We own a boxing school. So most weekends you'll find us at boxing matches. As a participant, I love it. As a spectator, I'm just not a spectating human. Mm.
You want to be part of it. So just as a light aside, did you start boxing when you were trying to get sober, or was boxing a lifelong passion for you? Because I can imagine if you were drinking so much and doing so much, could have been a very dangerous drunk if you knew how to box.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a violent man by any stretch of the imagination, but I do like to fight. That sounds weird. And I've worked at the bar, right? I've always had, I mean, up until I was 30, I had another job at the bar, right? And that was always something I did. So fighting was something that I did as a kid, something I did up until my 30s. After the doctor gave me the diagnosis, at that point I had gone from about 200 pounds to about 310 pounds over that year when I was, you know, when everything was kind of, my health was going really bad. When I got the diagnosis, it's like, you know, you got to get a good diet. You got to get good exercise. You got to drop the weight. You got to quit drinking. You got to do all this stuff. I started looking and I told my wife, like, I hate exercise. I hate it. I hate running. I don't want to do it. Hate doing pushups, all this shit. Hate it all. But when I was a kid, I loved hitting the heavy bag and I like boxing. So I found a local gym and I started using the heavy bag and I took a class and it was 1 hour. And I got home that day and I told my wife, it's like, if I can do that for 1 hour a day, then there's nothing in the world that I can't do. right? So then that led to about a year later, I'm still at that same gym, and I can just see, because I'm running a business during the daytime that's going through its own struggles, right? The data center business had its ups and downs by no imagination, especially through all of this stuff. I lost my predecessor to cancer, and you know, just a lot of turmoil. Mm-hmm. When I started boxing on the heavy bag, this was about 7 years ago, in training that way, I noticed the business wasn't doing well. I told my wife, I'm like, if this business shuts down, I'm dead. There's no other place in town that I can go. I can't do this stuff at home, you know? So I'm going to reach out to the owner and try to buy it. So I did. And I bought the gym from him in 2017. We bought the gym from him and we've been running it ever since. In 2001, actually 2000, I came in second place, Golden Gloves for St. Louis.
Congratulations.
So cool. I started competing. And right after that, COVID hit, like literally the next day. And then we changed to Box STL and we started our youth team, amateur youth team. So that would have been early 2001. And now we're one of the largest youth teams in the Ozark 22 district, which is our Missouri district for amateur boxing.
Cool. I want to continue our conversation, Ken, but we need to take another break for our underwriting announcements here at Health 411. We'll be right back. You're listening to 107.7 The Bronc and 1077thebronc.com.
Health 411 Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Bronc is underwritten by Capital Health. If someone you loved was sick, how far would you go to make sure they got the best care? Your mother, your sister, your best friend, your neighbor, your son? How far would you go for doctors who will meet with you longer so they really get to know you and who collaborate across disciplines so that they can devise a plan of care that's uniquely right for you? There's no doctor too far, no care too distant that you wouldn't go there. And for more than 100 years, so has Capital Health. From our hospitals in Trenton and Hopewell to our primary care offices all across Mercer, Bucks, and Burlington counties to right here at Rider University, Capital Health has the team of doctors, nurses, experts, specialists, and staff that you can count on to care as much about your loved ones as you do. Because you'd go to the ends of the earth if someone you loved was sick. And so do we, Capital Health.
There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronc and 1077thebronc.com. Welcome back to Health 411. I'm Professor Jonathan Karp here in the studio with Dan Geller and Josh Brewer, and we're continuing our conversation with Ken Cox. Ken is telling us about his personal journey on the path to sobriety in the world of entrepreneurship. And in the last segment, Ken, you mentioned that, you know, businesses have times where the business is going well and everything's smooth, not going so well. How does the up and downs, the stress of work, entrepreneurship, how has that challenged your path to sobriety?
It's very challenging. You have to have, I don't know about everybody else, but I have to have some outlet, something that I can do any time of the day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I have to have something that I can execute on if I have an overwhelming urge that I have no other way to get it. And I have to know what that is. I have to have that plan before the urge comes, right? It can't be something that I'm figuring out when, as an addict, the triggers can be so far and few between and so bizarre, right? Like just driving past the gas station that you remembered having, you know, a good conversation with somebody with a beer out front, like, oh, I'm just pulling there. Like for some reason, I want to now drink for some reason. I don't even know why, but it gets bad. So you have to know what you're going to do in those cases. For me, that's going to the gym. I can't do, and it's specifically a boxing gym. I can't do it 24-hour fitness and go hit a treadmill or ride a bike or you know, lift some weights. Something just primal about hitting something.
Now, is it hitting something or is it being hit or a combination of both? Because I can imagine
both being released. I can go to the gym and just work on the heavy bag or the Dublin bag or the speed bag, you know, that kind of stuff without, and that sparring. Will get the tension out of my body and suffice that craving for whatever it is. Getting hit does a whole different brings a whole new set of variables of joy.
Well, yeah, you're a boxer.
How long have you been boxing?
So hard to explain.
How long have you been boxing? Like in your whole like
just about 7 years.
Oh, just about
like
7 years.
Like sanctioned boxing.
Gotcha.
Learning the skill of boxing, and taking it seriously. I would say seriously about the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. 7 years. 7 years ago, I started doing like training on the heavy bag, just kind of hitting stuff.
And so, what's been like the best effect that boxing has had on your personal health?
Well, it's had its negatives too, right? After my Golden Gloves competition, I had to have two surgeries on my shoulders. But for me, it's been having something in my life that requires my body to be functioning at a reasonable level to accomplish it or be able to even participate at a hobbyist level, right? At a hobbyist level, you don't have to be 100% fit. You can go in, you can spar with guys, you can hit the heavy bag, those kinds of things. But, we have in boxing that kind of world of, hey, I can kind of just, I know my six punches, I can hit the bag and have a good time, all the way to highly, highly competitive sport.
Cool. And so I want to bring it back to this sort of the role of sobriety in business. Has it changed your decision-making processes and the businesses that you're involved with? Has it changed the kind of clients you recruit? And if it's changed, is it a positive thing? How do you view it? Because I can imagine over time you behave differently, and so the world around you is going to change and evolve sort of with you, I would hope.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think this is going to be different for everybody, but I think everybody that goes through sobriety is going to have to deal with this. It's just going to depend on when they deal with it. And that is setting boundaries for yourself in business and in life. You don't realize the nuances and the different freedoms you allowed people to abuse your service, to abuse you as a human, to take advantage of certain scenarios until you get sober and you really start saying, hey, I'm going to start taking care of myself, right? And then knowing that once I start taking care of myself, I can take care of a greater number of people, and holding that barrier very tightly, it causes some conflict, and you're going to lose a lot of relationships if that's the path that you choose to take. And you're going to lose them whenever you start creating boundaries for yourself. But what that leads to is the relationships that you do have are much stronger. The relationships that you do have, the accountability and the expectation of services are much clearer and less foggy. And it just makes for a wildly less chaotic life.
Cool. Do the people who work for your employees or the people, your colleagues, do they know? Has your relationship with them changed as a result?
In some, yes. I've unfortunately had to sever multiple ties with people that I love dearly. I hold very close to my heart, but the relationship just was not circular in nature, right? It was a one-way relationships, and those are hard things to deal with, even as an aging man.
Right, but part one of the things that comes with aging, I've certainly seen it in my life, is you have friends and you might have a history with them, but friends come and go. It's part of getting older. You get involved with new things. Not every friend is on you with every journey that you're involved. You're nodding because we're older. It's harder when you're in your 20s, like a lot of the people are surrounding me. You're not. That's a real thing, isn't it?
It is absolutely a real thing, and. I'm super fortunate like you. I get to work with a lot of youth, and being able to see things and remember things from their perspective. When you're in your 16 to 25, you care about stuff so much. Like everything is important to you, or it was to me, right? Just like the most absurd small thing I would have a huge amount of passion for. And it's sad as we age that this like passion flame seems to go out. But what I think you don't realize as a young man looking at an older guy, his flame is just getting brighter in a more specific area, right? We're focusing our time and our energy more strategically and more planned. And those relationships end up being wildly more fruitful than the relationships that you had on the other side.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're saying, Ken, that you feel like you're in a better position now, personally and professionally, that you've cut out the alcohol from your life. Am I putting words in your mouth or?
No, you're not. Absolutely. I mean, you know, I have some wild up and downs, right? I have a high risk tolerance, so I've been involved in almost every industry since the 90s, right? You know, for example, I exited cryptocurrency in 2016. I sold 80 Bitcoins.
Oh, wow.
In 2016, right? Mm-hmm. And I got to look back at that now and say, man, if I'd have waited a year, that's $153 million value that I sold for 50 grand to buy my gym. And I have to look at that and say, well, man, if I would have had that 150 million, I'd have been dead.
Yeah. Well,
and I would have died. So it wouldn't have mattered. So those kind of perspectives come into play really, really clear for you once you're on the other side of that. Right. I used to be really, really mad at my partners about this exiting this business in 2016. And I look back at it now and say, well, I would not have made it to here.
Of where you are now. Yeah. Pretty cool.
I definitely didn't have the capability of handling that money. I would have drank myself to death. I have zero doubt in my mind.
Wow. Right. Your liver enzymes wouldn't have mattered then if you're dead.
Nothing would have mattered, yeah, right? Because I know me well enough. And I knew that version of me well enough that it would have been. I mean, I almost did it without being a multimillionaire. So,
yeah. Wow.
If I had no reason to work or do anything else, then it would have been a downhill struggle for me.
That is a very sobering thought for primarily students who will be listening. So I thank you for that, Ken. Unfortunately, we're approaching the end of this segment and the end of the Health 411 program. I want to thank our guest, Ken Cox, an entrepreneur and recovering alcoholic. He gets to recover forever. Thank you, Ken. This is 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com. We're recording live from the Digital Bronx Studios. Thank you for listening to Health 411. This program is part of Capital Health and Rider University's efforts to bring people together to address issues associated with all aspects of health and healthcare. I want to thank our guest, Ken Cox, and I hope today's conversation with Ken has given you things to think about. And Ken is sharing his personal journey to sobriety and how it's affected his sort of position in the world of entrepreneurship. If you have questions and or comments about this program or to make suggestions for future broadcasts, please email us at health411@rider.edu.
Remember, you have a doctor's appointment scheduled for every Sunday at 10 a.m. Don't miss the all-new Health 411 with Dr. Jonathan Karp and our expert medical guest from Capital Health. You can listen to Health 411 anytime on demand. Go to 1077thebronx.com/health411 to listen to past episodes or tune in every Thursday at 9 a.m. to hear the Weekend Rewind edition of Health 411. Health 411 on 107.7 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. Capital Health is the region's leader in providing progressive quality patient care with exceptional physicians, nurses, and staff, as well as advanced technology.